Chapter 11. Exercise for the rest of us. Yes, exercise is good for you. Physical activity reduces your blood sugar and is good for your heart. It improves the quality of your sleep and your overall energy level. When you get into an exercise groove, you really feel great. For many of us, however, exercise conjures up images of no pain, no gain workouts and unrewarding drudgery. Many people have trouble getting into an exercise routine. It just does not seem to work for them. For every person I hear say something like this, "I feel so good when I exercise. I have more energy. My blood sugar comes way down, and I just feel great. I can't imagine a day without it." There's another who feels more like this. "I really just can't get into exercise. I know I'd do better if I did, but every time I join a gym or resolve to start exercising, it just doesn't last." If you are carrying around a lot of extra weight, exercise can be difficult. Perhaps you are limited by joint pain or heart problems. Maybe your good intentions just seem to vanish when the time comes to lace up your sneakers. In this chapter, we will tackle the various aspects of exercise, its benefits, its limitations, and the difficulties in getting started, and see how to make it work for you. One note of reassurance. If you cannot exercise because of a physical limitation, you can still lose weight, cut your blood sugar, and live a healthy life. In fact, most of the benefits of these diet changes came without exercise. That is because in our diet studies, we usually ask our volunteers not to alter their exercise patterns so we can isolate the effects of a diet change for research purposes. Exercise certainly adds to the health benefits that a good diet brings, but if it is simply not in the picture, you can still do well. What you are working for. Different kinds of exercise provide very different benefits. Aerobic exercise is any sort of rhythmic, continuous activity you perform for a sustained period, usually at least 10 minutes. Brisk walking, running, playing tennis, dancing, or skating can all be aerobic. This type of exercise reduces your blood sugar and triglycerides, and if you keep it up, you will live longer. Resistance exercise is weightlifting and other exercises in which the emphasis is on muscular effort, push-ups and deep knee bends, for example. It builds your muscle mass, or at least preserves the muscle you have. It also improves insulin sensitivity. Flexibility exercises, stretching, are intended to maintain the range of motion of your joints. They can also relieve stress. I will give you guidelines for how much and how often you should exercise. A diet-exercise combination can help prevent diabetes from ever developing. A groundbreaking study called the Diabetes Prevention Program followed 3,234 people whose blood sugar levels were creeping upward but were not yet high enough to warrant a diagnosis of diabetes. With a combination of diet and exercise, the participants were able to cut the risk of developing the disease by 58%. The exercise regimen totaled 150 minutes per week, a half hour, five times a week. There is a very big caveat with all of this, though. Exercise can boost the effects of a healthy diet, but it cannot make up for a poor one. In fact, of the two components, diet and exercise, the diet portion is much more important for weight loss and ultimately for preventing or controlling diabetes. A careful review of published research showed that people who simply began exercise programs did not lose much more weight than people who remained sedentary. Some studies are more optimistic, suggesting that an exercise program may boost the weight loss effect of a diet change by about 20%, but it is clear that for weight control, exercise cannot take the place of diet changes. This does not mean that exercise is of no help at all. It is definitely helpful. For instance, once a person has diabetes, exercise helps reduce A1C. In a review of several studies testing the effect of exercise, the average A1C in volunteers who began exercise programs fell to 7.7%, which is better than the 8.3% found in those who did not exercise. Once again, however, that result pales in comparison to the benefits of a diet change. To prevent diabetes or bring it under control, it is best to use both diet and exercise. One part of your body that benefits tremendously from exercise is your heart. A recent study tracked physical activity levels in adults with type 2 diabetes over a period of 19 years and looked specifically at the risk of dying of heart disease. It turned out that those who were moderately physically active were about 40% less likely to succumb to heart disease than were the sedentary people. Their routines included at least 4 hours per week of moderate exercise, such as walking, cycling, or light gardening. Active people also cut their risk of stroke. There are 3 other exercise benefits worth noting. First, exercise and eating are mutually exclusive activities, unlike eating and watching television. It is easy to scarf down extra calories while watching your favorite crime drama or a movie, but it is a real challenge while you're playing tennis. Exercise is calorie-free fun. Second, exercise helps you sleep. If you have given your muscles a good workout, they demand sleep. You will sleep much more soundly than if you had spent the entire day behind your desk, watching television or reading. And when you are well rested, it is easier to stay focused on a healthy diet and say no to unhealthful foods. Third, exercise makes you feel better. It lifts your spirits and is a natural antidepressant. Type 1 and type 2 muscle cells. Why do some people love exercise and others loathe it? Surprisingly enough, part of the reason is genetic. If you could look inside your muscles and compare them with those of other people, you would discover a sobering fact. Some people were born to exercise. That is to say, their muscles naturally contain many type 1 cells. The name has nothing to do with type 1 diabetes, it's just a coincidence. These muscle cells have a particularly strong blood supply made possible by a rich network of capillaries that bring in oxygen and reduce fatigue. They also have an extra supply of an enzyme called lipoprotein lipase, which breaks fats apart to be used as fuel. The result is extra energy for a long run. When you see people running down the road looking invigorated rather than haggard, or when someone waxes poetic about the joys of the runner's high, do not envy their resolve. Odds are they were born with muscles that are just loaded with type 1 cells. Other people's muscles contain mostly type 2 cells, which are fine for short bursts of exercise, but have less endurance for the long haul. Now, having said that, it is important to realize that muscles can change, at least to a degree. If you gradually but steadily increase the intensity of your workouts within the limits of safety, the blood supply to type 2 cells increases. Eventually, they become almost as vigorous as type 1 cells. I raise this biological distinction to make an important point. Exercise aptitude, or lack of it, is not a question of character. It is biology at work. If you've been beating yourself up for your lack of athletic prowess, it is time for a reprieve. Making it work for you. There are 2 keys to making exercise work. First, it is essential to keep it fun. For most of us, that means it should be a social event. It is more fun to go walking with someone else than by yourself. If you plan to exercise at a gym, you are much more likely to follow through if you sign up for a class, aerobics, yoga, or whatever, than if you go it alone. You are also much more likely to actually get to your class if someone is going with you. You might make an occasion of it and plan an especially healthful meal afterward. If you are going dancing or playing tennis, the word exercise may not even enter your mind. Your activity is too enjoyable to call it that. Keep it fun, because otherwise, you will not do it twice, much less 3 times a week. And for most people, fun means friends. You need other people with you to make it work. Second, it is important to exercise regularly rather than intermittently. To paraphrase Newton's first law of motion, an object at rest tends to stay at rest and an object in motion tends to stay in motion. If the object at rest is you, that is, if you are firmly planted on the couch, you will tend to stay at rest. If, on the other hand, you and a friend go for a walk every other day after dinner, you will stay on track. There is another reason for keeping exercise regular. The effect of any single exercise session is small. If you belong to a gym, you can see this for yourself. Just jump on the nearest treadmill and run flat out for a mile. Then, as you catch your breath, push the little button that lets you see how many calories you have burned. Surprised? That's right. You have expended only about 100 calories. That's less than half the calories in an order of McDonald's French fries or a bottle of soda. A single exercise session every now and then will not help you any more than occasionally eating a healthy meal. To be really effective, healthy habits have to be part of your routine. Also, for better or worse, exercise effects do not last very long. If you're laid up with an injury, for example, you will find your blood sugar or weight gradually returning to its pre-exercise level. People who get into a habit of going for a brisk walk or bicycle ride every day or two sustain their benefits. Bottom line, to make exercise work, keep it fun, and keep it regular. See your doctor first. Before you embark on a new exercise program, be sure to get your doctor's okay. Is your heart up to it? Are your joints ready? How vulnerable are you to hypo or hyperglycemia? Do you have any special eye or foot problems that could be aggravated by exercise? Your doctor should address all of these questions. Beware of jumping into vigorous exercise too quickly. If it has been months or years since you tried exercising regularly, start slowly. It takes time for your body to reap the rewards of your new, improved diet. A heart patient, for example, who begins a vegetarian diet, stops smoking, and starts really taking care of himself will probably feel better very soon. His chest pain may melt away within a few weeks, and he will be eager to jump into a vigorous exercise program. The fact is, though, that he still has the artery blockages he has been accumulating for years. Yes, the damage can be reversed, but it takes time, and he should not push himself past the limits set by his doctor. If you have type 1 diabetes, you may find that your blood sugar drops precipitously during and after exercise. This can also happen to people with type 2 diabetes who use insulin or drugs that cause insulin secretion, like gliburide, glipizide, glimepiride, nitaglynide, or rapaglinide. It is important to be alert to the possibility of a major blood sugar drop and to adjust your eating schedule, medication use, and exercise accordingly. Occasionally, the opposite can occur. You may find that your blood sugar is temporarily higher after exercise than it was before. A research team based in Florida tracked blood glucose in children with type 1 diabetes as they walked on a treadmill in 4 15-minute bouts with 5-minute rest periods in between. Their average blood glucose was 159 milligrams per deciliter when they started, but it had fallen to 112 milligrams per deciliter afterward. At least one quarter of the children became hypoglycemic during or right after the exercise. They were also more likely to be hypoglycemic during the following night. Exercise can reduce your blood sugar, and quickly. Of course, if you eat too much in an effort to prevent hypoglycemia, your blood sugar can go too high. For these reasons, it is important to speak with your physician about your medication, diet, and exercise program to make sure you are ready for exercise. Then, make whatever adjustments are needed for safety. Getting started. Okay, your doctor has given you the green light. You have rustled up some friends, and you are ready to begin. If you were imagining that I would push you into hours of jogging and weightlifting and harangue you with exhortations about no pain, no gain, well, push those thoughts aside. The goal is to enjoy exercise, so much so that it becomes part of your life. For aerobic exercise, I suggest starting with a half-hour brisk walk 5 days a week. assuming that you have no health-related exercise restrictions. If you prefer, you can exercise 3 times per week, either taking brisk 1-hour walks or doing more vigorous half-hour workouts. You can also break up those 30-minute walks into 10 or 15-minute mini-workouts if you like. Do not allow yourself more than 2 sedentary days in a row. The benefits of walking are not as great as those of a more vigorous exercise program, but it is a good place to start. The important thing is to find a time that works for you. A friend tells me that if she does not get her exercise in before lunchtime, it is just not going to happen. Too many unexpected demands crop up each day to count on free time in the afternoon or evening. It is a good idea to put exercise on your schedule, as if it were an appointment with yourself, and to include someone else in your plans. A pedometer will help you keep track of your progress. In our research studies, we use an Omron pedometer to track the total number of steps participants take each day, as well as the number of aerobic steps, steps taken as part of a continuous walk of at least 10 minutes. The participants can also program in their stride length to track mileage, and even estimate their calorie burn. Take note of how many, or how few, steps you take in a normal day, then gradually increase them. For reference, 10,000 steps or more is a vigorous day for a healthy person, but you may not have the strength or stamina to do that many. Do not push beyond your doctor's recommended limits. A podiatrist or nurse specializing in diabetes, certified diabetes educator or CDE, will help you take care of your feet. This is important since exercise can sometimes cause foot injuries or aggravate an existing injury. It is surprising how often people are unaware of gradually worsening foot sores. Your doctor will help you gauge your improvement and can advise you about increasing your exercise intensity. As your endurance improves, you will find that your energy just keeps increasing, and your weight and blood sugar stay under better control. What's your pleasure? Taking a regular walk is a great way to start exercising. When you are ready to add other activities, think about which ones you might enjoy. Aerobics classes can be fun, social, and sometimes intense. Dancing is wonderful exercise with better music than most aerobics classes. Tennis, either singles or doubles, can be a great workout. Many health clubs organize racquetball or handball lessons and competitions. Golf can be great exercise if you walk the course. Local running clubs often organize training groups for people working toward 5K, 10K, and half and full marathon races. Libraries are great sources for exercise videos and DVDs. For resistance and flexibility exercises, I suggest that you work with a personal trainer, both for safety reasons and to individualize your program using the right equipment. Professional athletes are not the only ones with access to professional fitness expertise. You can have it too. A personal trainer can help you plan a full program, not only for aerobics, but also for strength training and flexibility. Most health clubs have trainers on staff and may even offer a free session as an incentive to join. Why not take advantage of it? If you do not plan on joining a gym, just make an appointment for a single exercise counseling session so you can get a program that is right for you. Then schedule a follow-up. For people with type 2 diabetes who have no health-related exercise restrictions, the American Diabetes Association recommends resistance exercise that includes all major muscle groups 3 times a week. The workout should include 3 sets of 8 to 10 repetitions at a weight that cannot be lifted more than 8 to 10 times. No blame, no shame. With exercise, just as with diet, most people are not yet where they would like to be. Most of us do not have heart rate monitors, the latest running shoes or shorts with a pocket designed to hold an iPod. When the subject of exercise comes up in conversation, we may be at a bit of a loss if we are not part of the gym culture. Guilt and blame come into the picture when we are sedentary, just as they do when we are not eating well. Sometimes family members try to scold us into exercising, and sometimes doctors try the same approach. But all their moralizing is nothing compared to the guilt-laden punishment we heap on ourselves, as if not exercising were a tremendous moral failing. If that is where you are, let me encourage you to set guilt and blame aside. Just let it all go. Tell your guilt-inducing friends that up until now you have been illustrating Newton's first law of motion. Now, however, you are about to get into gear and explore the second part of that principle. The same applies if you happen to fall off the wagon. Let's say you have let your exercise regimen lapse for a bit, maybe even a very long bit. Do not waste your time feeling bad about it. It happens to everybody. Just dust yourself off and get back on. When exercise is fun, and your friends or family are part of it, and when you start at a level that's right for you and keep it regular, you have the formula for success.